environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is News for the Rest of Us, free of corporate influence. It's June, listeners, and in Canada and the US, June marks the start of Pride season. Pride is when 2S LGBTQIA+ communities and allies gather in solidarity to celebrate queer identity and visibility, to commemorate the history of resistance to discrimination and violence, and to come together to fight current issues facing queer people. This week on Rabble Radio, we're re-releasing an episode from 2019, where former Rabble Radio host Victoria Fenner sat down with Lila Mikolos, a queer activist from Hamilton, Ontario, to talk about the city's record of hate crimes and what other small communities in Canada can learn from Hamilton. Here are Fenner and Mikolos in conversation. Take a listen.
Hamilton, Ontario has been a place we've been hearing more about in recent years. I lived there for about 20 years myself, moving out of the city only in 2014. When I lived there, Hamilton was known as that place with dirty factories that you see from the Queen Elizabeth Way and the deteriorating crime-ridden downtown. Nobody from outside the city talked about Hamilton except to say bad things about it. The people who lived there, like me, saw a different Hamilton. To many of us, it's a place full of people with a good heart, lots of arts and music, beautiful parks, and overall a place we love to call home. That's what makes it hard for people who love Hamilton to deal with some of the less positive things that have been happening recently. Hamilton has just earned the distinction of being community number one in police-reported hate crimes in Canada, according to a July 2019 report by Statistics Canada. And judging by recent events, it's not getting better. Over the past few months, there have been very visible demonstrations of that spirit of hate manifesting itself. Hamilton Pride was targeted by far-right hate groups, and yellow vesters have been showing up at City Hall for demonstrations for several months. There are a few more elements in this toxic stew, but I'll let my guest today tell you about them. Lila Mikolos is the former chair of Pride Hamilton, who's also been on the LGBTQ Advisory Committee. She's one of the engaged citizens who thinks that the local city council and mayor's actions are inadequate to address the problem of hate in Hamilton. And she also thinks that the problem didn't just rise up out of nowhere. We begin our conversation with a recap from Lila about recent happenings related to hate in the city, and then move into what other communities can learn from what's going on in Hamilton.
Well, things have been flaring up for quite some time. We've had several hate groups in the Hamilton area for a few years now that have routinely had meetups in front of City Hall and the forecourt. But for the past 2 years, regularly every Saturday morning, this has all kind of morphed into yellow vesters. And the yellow vest movement here in Canada, although they've taken from the one in France, their goals and where they're going with it are quite different. It's a very anti-immigration message, anti-Muslim message, and also homophobic.
There was also something that happened at Pride, which kind of was one of the powder kegs that sort of lit everything, right?
Yes. So Pride happened June Father's Day weekend this year. And the group that was meeting in front of City Hall, the Yellow Vesters, connected with, there's a bunch of folks that refer to themselves as street preachers who in the past 2 years have been showing up at local Pride events all throughout Southern Ontario. They come with megaphones and big giant signs filled with hateful messages. And so the Yellow Vesters decided to help give their support to the hate preachers at Hamilton Pride this year. And that combination of folks were met with anarchist and Antifa activists who had had a counter response to them, and then this then broken into violence.
Where were the police in all this?
So the organizers of Hamilton Pride were, from what I understand, trying to have a fairly detailed, constructive conversation with Hamilton police leading up to Pride to discuss all kinds of various aspects of Pride's relationship with the police, and they just weren't connecting with the police. The police weren't connecting with them. And then it was, I think, a day or two before Pride, an officer spoke with one of the organizers, and that organizer informed them where the hate group was last year and what to expect and what time they'll probably show up and exactly where they will be. So they were given detailed information, including maps And then when the violence went down, there were no police to be seen. And I think things went on for close to an hour before police intercepted. And at that point, the police more or less just walked away the hate folks, their paraphernalia, from the park. And that was pretty well it.
So what was the reason then for that reaction from the police?
So according to members of the Pride Committee who were there that day, there were police officers who said things such as, well, if you had let us have a community recruiting booth, or if you had invited us to your event, this wouldn't have happened. And then this same sentiment was repeated by the police chief on one of our local radio stations where he has a regular town hall thing. And he again reiterated the same comment that the police would have reacted differently if Pride had invited them to the event, let them have patrol officers, and let them have a recruiting booth, which is very disturbing to hear this from the police.
And on top of that, then, there's also something called the hate bus that we heard something about.
So in response to the hate groups that have been regularly hanging out in front of City Hall in Hamilton on Saturday mornings, activists have decided to reclaim the space in various different ways on Saturday mornings and have counter-protests to the hate groups with various different events. And sometimes it's just about having signs filled with messages of love and peace rather than hate and violence. And on one of those particular Saturdays, a person had a school bus and drove it onto the sidewalk and onto the forecourt. And the police were trying to de-escalate the situation, talked to this gentleman for nearly an hour, and got them to take their bus off the sidewalk. And in that same morning, another activist from the queer community, who's an anarchist, was dancing on the rainbow crosswalk when the light was red and not, you know, doing anything with the traffic. And then they were taken away rather violently by the police, thrown in the back of their one of their police cruisers with no air conditioning, no water, and the windows shut on one of those hot days that was like nearly 30 degrees Celsius. So also very disturbing. And also just this past weekend, the Yellow Vesters decided to target another community in the Hamilton area. So instead of hanging out in front of City Hall, they went into the Ottawa Street BIA area where there's several shops and restaurants and what have you. And there were several of the business owners in the area wanted them gone and made it very clear. And they were asking the police officers who were patrolling around that day, you know, what can you do? And the police officers seemed to get mad at the business owners and take pictures of them. But they weren't doing anything about the hate group that was standing at the corner of Barton and Ottawa. Also, the nice thing was most of the reaction from the Hamiltonians to the haters at Ottawa and Barton were to give them the bird and tell them to F off. So they weren't getting a lot of support.
How long have you lived in Hamilton?
I have lived in Hamilton since 1982, over 30 years.
So have you seen anything like this before? Did this just come out of nowhere? And
this has been brewing for a while, but I used to organize Hamilton Pride in Hamilton. And we had a community meeting last year in preparation for the hate preachers that we were expecting to target our event. And I did say to the community then, I said, I have never experienced a group organizing themselves to purposely target our event to spread hate. I mean, there had been incidents that happened. I'm thinking a few years back, the Portuguese soccer team won a game at the World Cup and we were walking through Little Portugal and we had an incident between the parade participants and the soccer fans. But that wasn't something pre-planned. That was something that just sort of happened spontaneously in the moment. But there was never any sort of concentrated effort of groups of people with hate towards our queer community organizing themselves to thwart and bring down our event or spread hate at our event. Usually it was kind of like, if you weren't interested in our queer community, you just didn't go to the event. There wasn't any sort of proactive stopping or halting of the event in the decade I was a part of organizing it, which was throughout the 90s into the early 2000s.
So, and how have your municipal politicians reacted to all of this? Are they showing leadership?
So this has been probably the biggest disappointment is the response to the hate. One would hope in this day and age that the response would be an unequivocal, this is wrong, we're putting an end to it. We're going to stop this. We're going to, you know, take charge of the situation and make it very clear that this is not the Hamilton we want to be about. But that was not the response from our mayor and police chief. And there was a lot of victim blaming of the queer community. There seemed to be a lot of anger towards segments of the queer community who are connected with anarchist communities in the city, because there was an incident on Lock Street with some vandalism that was spearheaded by anarchists in town. So there seems to be some resentment connected with the fact that this area was targeted. The police are very mad at the anarchists. The anarchists were the ones who stepped in to protect Pride. And so it's this dog chasing its tail thing going on, rather than the real problem, which is we've got hate groups in town that are proactively spreading hate and also violence on marginalized communities. And it's not just our community. There was an incident that just happened just a couple of days ago about a Jewish family who were having swastikas spray painted on their property. And then their property was just, set on fire, from what I read in the paper. So these hate incidences aren't isolated to just the queer community, but the response to the queer community has been very distressing.
So then the politicians' response then, I mean, why do you think that they're not responding more strongly against hate?
I think there's a multi-layer of issues going on here. So one thing is abundantly clear from the politics throughout the world, whether it's Trump's America or Brexit in the UK or Bolsonaro in Brazil, that hate is being normalized. And it's becoming this mainstream thing where we seem to want to give some cachet or license to people who want to say homophobic or anti-Semitic or Islamophobic things, as if this is an opinion worth airing or giving time to or giving a platform to. So we keep normalizing it, and this has been the strange, weird, twisted conversation. At one point, the counselors were talking about, is there some sort of policy that they could put in place that would keep the Yellow Vesters from being on City Hall property and congregating there to spread hate? And there was this tug and pull about freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, and are we infringing on people's rights of freedom of speech? And then if you're a member of a marginalized community, you're kind of like, well, that's nice that you're really worried about those people that want to say hateful things, but I'm actually worried about my survival, my life, and my existence because of the spread of hate. So there's that piece of it where this stuff that was so distasteful and not all that long ago has been commonplace now, where we accept this as some sort of, you know, the other side of the viewpoint that we need to discuss or talk about. The other thing that has become painfully clear through this whole series of one event after another is that our current civic leadership in Hamilton just doesn't seem to have the sophistication, the maturity to deal with the situation with some finesse and empathy and understanding beyond very, very rudimentary sort of boilerplate language. There's just a lack of some higher level leadership on how to navigate and handle this. And I think some of that comes from the fact that we had an election where our mayor, who's been reelected, only really kind of had one candidate who was a strong rival. But their sole issue seemed to be about the LRT, but also that other candidate was using a lot of dog whistle language throughout the election, which was very troubling for anybody who was part of a marginalized community. And I really think that our mayor felt, I cut ribbons, I kiss babies, I shake hands, I'm at the rubber chicken dinner, I've done my job as mayor today. I don't think he ever saw this coming and had prepared himself for it. I don't think he is the person to know how to navigate that. And every time he takes another misstep, he keeps reaffirming it. The other troubling part is I can kind of see how the mayor might not know that, but I'm even more troubled that his staff doesn't seem to get it. Because we've been here before as Hamilton. Shortly after 9/11, the Hindu temple here in Hamilton was firebombed. And there was an immediate response from people in positions of leadership, whether it was the mayor, police chief, grassroots organizations, stakeholders such as the university, all coming together immediately in response, putting together a community response, connecting marginalized communities together immediately. There was no question of this, and the statements against what had happened were unequivocal. And now we have this strange, weird, watered down, we need to talk about both sides, victim blaming thing going on, which is just, a mess. It's a real mess. And we haven't had a lot of people step up to the plate in an effective way. And we have a new police chief. Well, he's not new, but new since last time things have happened with queer community and incidents, who also seems to, in a very troubling way, not understand our community or get what he's navigating. And he keeps sticking his foot in it too. So it's very troubling because we've been here before as a city. We've responded so much better than this. And some of this, they're just easy things to do. Like, we didn't even have the mayor or the police chief call up Hamilton Pride and its organizers and just check in and say, are you okay? What can I do? Like, these conversations weren't happening. They just seemed to get angry at them. So it's been distressing and very frustrating.
Now, you ran for city council last time around, and that was the election 2 years ago?
The election was just last fall.
Last fall. Time flies. Yeah. So What would you be doing differently if you had succeeded and you were on council?
Well, we do have individual councillors that are doing good things and good work. And Brad Clark, along with Narendra Nand, put forward a motion about looking at how do we make that space in the forecourt safe, and we don't have it as be a space spread for hate, although their motion got kind of stuck in the weeds a bit because legal was very worried about the implications of it. Also, Maureen Wilson and Narendra Nand, also two councillors, put forward a motion asking for an independent review of what happened at Hamilton Pride, and the Hamilton Police Services Board in their July meeting voted to investigate the feasibility of doing that. So there are individual councillors doing some good things. It's just there doesn't seem to be a consensus statement as a whole coming from the mayor, from the council as a whole, that this is wrong. There's just lots of wavering and wishy-washiness and stuff. And it should have been a strong statement. And I don't think it's an accident that those Maxime Bernier billboards that were anti-immigration that just recently got put up and now coming down, we got one ended up in Hamilton because, well, I guess we're the kind of constituents that, you know, Maxime's looking for to vote for him.
That, the other thing we didn't mention, too, was you had a case where the one high up in your IT department at City Hall just left, right? And what was that about?
Yes. So there was a person who was like a senior manager in the IT department for the city of Hamilton, been working there for, I think, over 15 years. Used to be one of the head honchos of the Heritage Front, a very well-known Hamilton hate group. Also, one of the mayoral candidates, Paul Frum, very good friends with the outgoing IT senior guy. So we had people who were advocates for hate running for mayor, and then we had somebody who was an advocate for hate in our IT department. So he has finally been let go. We don't know exactly what the whole situation is, but I'm sure there was some sort of severance package involved in his dismissal, and I suspect when Sunshine List come out next, we'll probably see his name on it.
Right. So now you're a person who really, really likes Hamilton. I've known you for quite a few years, and you've always been a person who really liked living where you're living. Is it just Hamilton? Or, I mean, how do you feel about your city right now, first of all?
I don't think it is just Hamilton, because when I, you know, scroll through my Twitter feed or my Facebook feed, I'm seeing stories like this going on all over the world, right? So I don't think this is unique to Hamilton. Sadly, Hamilton just seems to be the flashpoint for a lot of it, but I don't think it's just a Hamilton issue, but it is pretty embarrassing, because I remember when the Hindu temple got burnt down shortly after 9/11 and the news alert came up on CBC radio as I'm getting dressed and ready for work, like the blood drained from my face. I couldn't believe it. And here we are again. It feels like, have we learned nothing? And we're never going to ground zero. We're going back to like baby steps on how to handle these things. And the baffling part for me is we've done this work before. Have we all forgotten it? Or what's happened here that all these, you know, institutions that are in our civic landscape here in Hamilton don't have some fundamental understandings about equity, inclusion? How do we work with marginalized communities? How do we make sure that people are having a voice and their voices are being heard? And how do we respect these communities that we've really taken quite a few steps back? And it's sad.
Last question now. What can other communities learn from the Hamilton experience about dealing with hate in their communities?
Walking away from all this and seeing all the missteps from so much of our leadership in the community, I think when these things happen, we need to make it very clear in an unwavering voice that it's wrong, that we condemn it. And then talk is cheap. You can't just, you know, put up the blanket statement or, you know, be at the press release gallery thing and talk into the microphones. You have to do things. There has to be a concrete commitment to ending these things. And we've lost that piece here. We were doing that work and then it kind of dissipated. And even just now that the mayor had a meeting with queer community members and the queer community members felt a little thrown into a meeting that they had certain expectations of, and it became about something else. And then there was a press release that came out from the mayor, and it feels disingenuous. It's like, don't use this horrible, awful thing that you've mishandled since day one to do some publicity spin, because that's just crass. And we need to do real things. We need to do listening to those communities and meeting them where they're at. And instead of asking those communities to come see you in your silo of power where you're living in a very bubble-wrapped world. So I think the big piece is condemning it and making that clear and making it unequivocal. You have to do team building, that your leadership team is with you on that statement. And you need to do networking and community building outside of your circle so that you've built a base of people who are all committed to that together. And it's working in every single community center, workplace, place of worship, that everybody's on board on that same messaging. And we had a very good example of that here before, and we can do it again, but I'm just, it's very confusing to me why there doesn't seem to be a sincere political will. There's press releases and things like that, but I'm not feeling the sincerity of that. It feels hollow.
Victoria Fenner, former Rabble Radio host, and Lila Miklos in conversation back in 2019. We have a bunch of really special interviews like this one that are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Rabble.ca, which we encourage you to check out. And of course, remember to like, share, and subscribe. Switching gears now, let's review the top stories on Rabble.ca in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, let's turn things over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with environmental news. The provincial government of Alberta is outraged at proposed federal legislation that would crack down on so-called greenwashing by fossil fuel companies. Greenwashing is the practice of performative and sometimes inaccurate advertising by fossil fuel companies that attempts to make their business seem more environmentally friendly than it actually is. While BC 59 sets a high bar for what constitutes false advertising or greenwashing, that did not stop Alberta's fossil fuel-friendly government from reacting with outrage this week. Alberta's Environment Minister Rebecca Schultz called Bill C-59 a gag order against fossil fuel companies. Advocates for the legislation, like NDP MP Charlie Angus, say, however, that it is time that fossil fuel companies be held accountable for the harm that their products do, in the same way that tobacco companies are barred from advertising their own harmful products. In labor news, and from the Rebel Book Lounge, Fred Wilson reviews Unjust Transition, Future for Fossil Fuel Workers. The book describes the labor dispute between members of Unifor Local 594, representing fossil fuel workers at the Co-op refinery complex in Regina, Saskatchewan, and their employer. Starting in 2019, one of the key issues of the six-month dispute was fears by the company that they would be losing profits as the economy shifted to greener energy sources and would therefore be unable to pay their workers severance and retirement packages. Wilson explains how the book uses the dispute as a case study for the future of labor fights as the transition to a sustainable economy continues. In economic news, rabble columnist Lois Ross discusses whether boycotts really work. In recent months, there has been a national call for a boycott of the Loblaws chain of grocery stores and pharmacies. Loblaws has been accused of price gouging in recent years, and was found to have colluded with bread manufacturers to keep bread prices high, a scheme for which the company paid a historic fine. The boycott began on social media with the website Reddit, with the group Loblaws is Out of Control. They had planned to boycott Loblaws during the month of May, but group members announced on Reddit that they intended to continue their boycott indefinitely. Ross explains that while large corporations generate a lot of revenue, it adds up when large groups of shoppers choose to spend their dollars elsewhere. Staying in economic news, in an op-ed for Rabble, Paul Kinnert explains how public-private partnerships are good for business, but bad for the public good. Public-private partnerships are when governments partner with private industries to get a project done. Kinnert warns, however, that public-private partnerships are simply an even worse form of privatization of public money. Read the full article on Rabble.ca today. And finally, Rabble's Rabble Rousers to Watch series has returned. Every year, Rabble asks our readers, what are the organizations that inspire you? Who are the Rabble Rousers to watch? And every year, our reader responses introduce us to new groups of inspiring activists. The first activist organization that we are featuring this year is Independent Jewish Voices Canada. Independent Jewish Voices Canada is a group that rejects Zionism and instead seeks to promote peace and justice in the Middle East for both Jews and Palestinians. They've been very active for years on the issue of Palestinian repression at the hands of the Israeli government, and in recent months have been actively supporting protests against Israel's brutal assault on Gaza. Stay tuned as we feature more Rabble Rousers throughout the year. To read the full version of all the stories we talked about today, please visit rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hello, this is Boris Chassaigne. To get a feel on what's happening across the country, listen to Viewpoints. For reports, interviews, and documentaries on politics, arts and culture, the environment, housing, and more. Thanks to 30 journalists stationed in the Canadian provinces and territories. Local news nationwide. Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM and streaming online at cjsf.ca.